The date is November 8th, 1995, and we're watching Ace Ventura, When Nature Calls. Welcome to I Used to Like This One.
Hello and welcome to I Used to Like This One, the show where we take a look back at movies we remember fondly from our childhood and attempt to look past the nostalgia to see if they still hold up. My name is Sean Wells, and with me, as always, is the like and love to my alrighty then.
That's a good one. That's respect. Hello, everybody. It's Colin Stewart.
Well, those were two jokes that they definitely made sure they carried over into the sequel and doubled down on. So I figure it's in your face. I didn't want to touch the potential racism of this movie by going anywhere else with this. I'm like, let's just do catchphrases.
Fair.
Well, this week, we are looking back at November 1995 when the movies and theaters were Casino, Fair Game, that's a Cindy Crawford, Billy Baldwin classic, Leaving Las Vegas, Mallrats, and of course our movie for today, Kids' Choice Award winner for favorite movie, Ace Ventura, When Nature Calls, which earned $212.39 million on a $30 million budget.
Wow.
And you know, out of that $30 million budget, like half of that was probably Jim Carrey's paycheck. I think he was a $20 million man by the time this one came out.
And that's very, very interesting. Very interesting. Anyways,
wait, I did make a note of it. Sorry, he got paid $15 million to reprise Ace Ventura.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, as always, there will be spoilers ahead, so if you don't want this movie to be spoiled for you, like
Guano Soup.
Sure, let's go Guano Soup. Then please hit pause, go watch the movie, and then come back and hear what we have to say.
I mean, really, it could be almost spoiled for you like the movie itself, but maybe we'll get there. I don't know. I'm very interested to see what you think about this movie. But first, we have to get to taglines. I've got three taglines this week. So the first one, it's the long one. The Great Plains of Africa, the cradle of civilization, a place where there exists a balance between nature and man. So ancient, so sacred, no man would dare to disturb it. No man but Ace Ventura.
Okay. So,
I don't know where that tagline was, because that doesn't even feel like a poster tagline, but it was listed in taglines, so I bring it up. Number two, most people wouldn't last 1 minute in the real wild nature. Ace Ventura, not even a second. I don't understand how that's true.
Yeah.
He survived the whole time.
That one falls a little flat.
Spoiler alert, he lives at the end of the movie, so he lasts longer than a second. Well, finally, number three. New animals, new adventures, same hair.
That one's pretty good. I'll give that one it.
But if I do want to actually that one, he does drastically get a different hairdo in this movie. So there is definitely different hair.
That's only because somebody messes with the do.
That's true. You don't mess with the do. I think he was trying it on a new catchphrase and it never took. Yeah. For some reason, I remember like when Nature Called, Look Who Answered was a tagline of this. That's what I thought it was. It seemed so familiar to me. And then I realized, like I searched it and realized it was the Big Daddy tagline. And I had recently done Big Daddy. So, but that's a better tagline. Nature Called, Look Who Answered. I mean, I don't know. Well,
I
the first one is a lot of description of the movie, but let's hear more from Colin with a 60-second synopsis.
Okay. After dropping a raccoon to its death during a failed rescue attempt, Ace Ventura leaves his life as a pet detective behind and becomes a monk. When a sacred African albino bat is stolen from a local tribe, the British consulate travels to Tibet to find Ace and convinces him to come to Africa and use his skills to find the bat in order to return it and avoid a catastrophic tribal war. There you go.
I guess so. Yeah, I guess that's kind of all there is to it. And many hijinks ensue.
Yes, and many hijinks ensue.
Pandemonium. Yeah, it's very, very, very simple plot. Yeah. So, yeah, Ace Ventura, When Nature Calls. I remember, I mean, we talked about it in the first one. I loved the first one. This is the Jim Carrey that... That's where he took off. That's the Jim Carrey that we all in that generation came to know and love. The Elastic Man Jim Carrey. And so I was there for a Ace Ventura sequel. I saw this in theaters and was definitely let down. But it's still Ace Ventura.
So, yeah, like, seeing those box office numbers after watching this movie, I have to think that most of that money was made up front. Like the opening weekend of this movie must have been huge.
Yeah.
For it to have made that much money, because once word got out, I can't foresee it have been like, I don't know.
That box office must have plummeted quickly. Even just looking at the other movies that were in the theater, I mean, Casino and Leaving Las Vegas, those are power hitters, but they're like drama power hitters, so they probably weren't huge movies. And like Cindy Crawford was the next best choice. I don't know. And I mean, I know Mallrats didn't do well, so like I'm not even putting that in the conversation. Yeah, it's just everyone wanted more Jim Carrey, and this is what they got.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's my history with Ace Ventura. So, Colin, I know it's been mentioned on the show before, but tell us your history with Ace Ventura. When Nature Calls, I mean.
Yeah, I've never seen this movie in full. The only part of it that I have seen, I remember, like, for some whatever reason, when it comes to this movie, I remember going to my cousin's house one summer and this movie being on, and it was on specifically during the rhinoceros like birthing scene, and I remember watching that part, and then I think, I don't know if it scarred me or something, or if I was just like that's interesting but not interesting enough. And yeah, it's weirdly like, as because I love Ace Ventura Pet Detective, but I've never had any interest in watching this movie.
Yeah. Huh. Well, glad I could bring you on this journey.
Yeah. I don't know, and I don't even know why. Like, I don't, like, it doesn't even make sense why. It's almost like the universe was conspiring to like protect me from it or something. And then Sean got involved.
That's right.
Like the devil.
That's right. I'm playing some Loki tricks on you. I'm messing with your timeline. Well, alrighty then. Let's jump into Ace Ventura, When Nature Calls. Directed by Steve Odekirk, who is like the director of Kung Pao and Nothing to Lose. Produced by James G. Robinson. And written by Jack Bernstein, who gets the characters only credit. So, didn't actually write a word of this script. This is mostly just a Steve Odekirk script. So the director, also writer, and also very good pal of Jim Carrey, from what I've read. So there might have been a little bit of nepotism going on. That non actually blood related nepotism, but friendship nepotism going on, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So one thing you may notice right off the bat is that this movie is very much a contractual obligation movie.
Yes. I think that is very, very, very apparent.
Yes. Yes. But you can also tell that they looked at the success of the first movie and went, how can we make it bigger and flashier because we have a much bigger budget now and we have our $15 million man.
Yeah, I was trying to figure out like how, like, because Pet Detective came out in 94 and this movie came out like literally a year after. That's such a quick turnaround for a sequel.
Yeah. But, you know, we are going to open this movie up by flying a helicopter through the goddamn mountains. That's what we're going to do. Like, they are... This isn't Jim Carrey kicking a package down the street and being doing funny shit to the, you know, as the UPS guy in the first one. Oh, no. This is him climbing up the side of a goddamn mountain. And we're going to do a whole spoof of the movie Cliffhanger. Have you ever seen Cliffhanger? It's a Sylvester Stallone. He's a mountain climber.
I think I've maybe seen it once, but I don't remember it that well.
John Lithgow is the bad guy. It's actually kind of a cool fucking movie. It's too bad we didn't think of that for Action Month. Here we are in our Sequels Month. I didn't even announce the theme of the month. Sequels Month, we're revisiting some of the movies that we've already watched on the show, but doing the sequels, whether they're good or bad. But yeah, this whole opening bit is a very faithful recreation of like the pivotal moment in the Cliffhanger movie where he's trying to save the raccoon. Obviously in Cliffhanger, he's trying to save some woman. Mm-hmm. But yeah, down to the buckle breaking and everything, it's a very impressive spoof if you were to watch them side by side. We'll have to watch Cliffhanger.
Yeah, we should actually, because I was like, I did not remember. I had no idea that that was like a spoof at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I did think it was. I will say, I thought it was weird that when the belt broke, that he reaches for the raccoon's arm and not the like broken carabiner or belt thing, which seems like he might have been able to get a better grip.
Yeah,
but
now you that know. You know, it's the direct ripoff of that other movie. That's what happens in that other movie.
Okay. Yeah, that makes more sense.
Well, we meet our main man in this opening, so let's talk about this cast. I don't think this will take very long because I don't know who a lot of these people are.
Yeah, we have Jim Carrey, of course, as Ace Ventura. Ian McNeice is Fulton Greenwall.
So is that's the new fat guy that we've got in this movie? Is that what's going? That's Fulton, right? Okay.
Yeah. Simon Callow is Vincent Cadby.
He's one of those guys that looks familiar to me for other things. He's always mm-hmm. playing some snooty, stuck-up rich guy, I think.
Maynard Ezeashi is Prince Uda. Bob Gunton is Burton Quinn.
He's the guy we saw in Demolition Man. He's the police chief in Demolition Man, yeah.
Sophie Okonedo is the Wachati princess. Tommy Davidson is Tiny Warrior. Wachutu Prince. Ottawale is Hitu. I feel like the rest are all...
Yeah, Ottawale, he's Killer Croc in the Suicide Squad. Tommy Davidson is someone that was on In Living Color with Jim Carrey. Everyone else, it's kind of like, they're all non-linkers. None of them have blue highlights, except Bruce Spence is Gaji. But yeah, oh, and the guy that plays the Monopoly guy, Michael Reed McKay, he plays Bane pre-transformation in Batman and Robin.
Oh, I was... For some reason, I was thinking the Dark Knight, and I was like, he would have been ancient in that movie. But no, I gotcha. No, yeah. I get it. That's funny. I know, like, nobody in this cast.
Yeah, which, pretty much.
I will say, like, you were talking about in this movie, I feel this is, like, the worst of sequel, like, not just, like... Like it does everything that sequels do badly, especially like comedy sequels. Well, I noticed in this movie.
What's worse is it does everything that the comedy or that the sequels will do badly, but with the actual cast from the original too. Well, I mean, I guess you're only bringing over one man. It's not like you're bringing in Courtney Cox as well. But quite often, when you get such a shitty sequel, it's something like Son of the Mask, where you've recast the main guy, or Or Dumb and Dumber 2, like the, or sorry, whichever one has the young them. Dumb and Dumber-er, is that?
Yeah.
So yeah, whenever they change casts, that's when they get really bad. But yeah, it's
yeah.
It's almost like this movie looked at the original and thought people find this shit funny, and they just leaned into the wrong part of what made it funny and took away all the charm by doing that.
Yeah, I also was thinking, like, I kind of wanted to go back and watch Pet Detective, but a couple of things I noticed off the bat were what you just said is, like, they I hate it when comedies are like, oh, they like this in the first one, let's repeat all these stupid jokes and sayings and do it all over again. And, like, part of, like, funny is surprise.
Yeah.
Like, there's not a lot of funny in like, what's, I don't know, like, comfort or comfortable or, like, rote. And I feel like they miss that. And then I think, too, is, like, dare I say there was too much Ace?
Well,
like, there was too much Jim Carrey. Like, there was nobody else prominent enough. Like, in the last one, you have Courtney Cox, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you have, like,
all the Miami Dolphins guys.
The Dolphin, all the detectives and everything.
You've got Tone Loke, yeah.
Yeah, whereas in this one, it's, like, just him all the time. And it's, like, Jim Carrey is taking it to level 20 of his stuff. And it's just, like, I felt like in Pet Detective, it was, like, more diluted. And the story was actually, I had to watch this movie again because the first time I watched it, I got to the end and I was like, what is the thing with the bat? Like, I didn't understand. Like, they gloss over it so fast that you're just kind of like
sitting there doing funny shit by standing on their altar when they're telling you the legend of the bat. Because one thing I really noticed more than the other one, they made him an asshole. That's how they wrote him, right? Like, everything with the car. In the first one, when he fucks up the car and everything, it's funny because it's his own car that he's fucking up. But the opening of this one, he's driving through Africa, driving around in that thing. He goes off-roading with it, and then he flips it into the... That's not your car, dick! But it's just a bunch of things like that where he just feels spiteful in this movie, and that's how they've written him, and it takes away a lot of that charm of the character of Ace Ventura. It's funnier when he's putting people in their place and making fun of them in the process.
Yeah, and his animal protectiveness is also not as endearing as it is in the first one. Like, that also just comes off as, like, weird and, like, too over the top. Mm-hmm. Whereas it was, like, a more understated... I think where this movie kind of misses for me, the two things is, like, they should have taken more opportunity now that you have the character established to, like, show why he is the way he is. Mm-hmm. Like, have some flashbacks to, like, young Ace. And like, let's see, like... how he even became the pet detective. I think it was a massive mistake as well. Like, this is another comedy sequel thing. It's like it's like The Hangover. You know, like, The Hangover is great. The first one is, like, an amazing movie. But by the time you get to the third and they're going to, like, Thailand or wherever they are, you're like, frick, like, you're taking away, like, what's making it good.
Yeah.
It's like the groundedness of the movie is what's nice. And then I also think... a big miss of this movie was to not call back the beginning, because it's like the whole thing with the raccoon is a great starting point. Almost have like this crisis of conscience where he's like, can I even be a pet detective? Can I even save animals? Like, like, that should have been his whole story in this movie. And then you have at the end where maybe it's like, he drops the bat off a cliff, but he manages to save it and save the day or whatever. Like,
yeah.
Just, but like, something like that could have made this movie story wise 1,000 times better than it was. I just like,
Andrew Garfield needs to be redeemed for breaking Gwen Stacy's back. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah,
the movie was just
It was a mess.
It was such a mess.
I'll say it right off the bat. Yeah, it was a mess. Like, I laughed a bit going into it because I knew how bad this movie was, but I was hoping that maybe I just forgot some special gem about this movie. And no, I was hoping to redeem this movie, but no, it starts off with, yeah, they turned one of my favorite characters into an asshole, and that from that point on, I had trouble getting behind anything else, because it's just like, why do I even care? I guess when it came to the bat, he did push back against the idea of Ace Ventura not liking bats.
Yeah.
Jim Carrey didn't think that was funny, and he thought it should be that Ace is allergic to bats.
Yeah,
but
I think that would have been better.
It might have been, yeah, because then he still at least has the unconditional love for animals no matter what they are.
Yeah, there's other things too, is like, I was trying to piece together, like, I don't know which one he shot first. I think it was Batman Forever, but I was like, I see so much of that Riddler character in this version of Ace Ventura.
Yes.
Yeah, it was like, I felt like there were times where he was like mixing roles, and
yeah.
And then there was the other thing of like, every time he's walking, he has that really like overpronounced like strut.
Yeah.
That he like never had in the first movie, and it took me out of the movie so much, I found.
Yeah.
Because I was just like, what is happening? It was almost like instead of like being in character, Jim Carrey was like trying to be Ace, impersonating Ace Ventura.
Yeah, because that's what you see out of someone that does an Ace Ventura impersonation is, alrighty then. You know, and that, yeah, it felt like, because even when he dropped his catchphrases, like, it just, they were so forced, his alrighty thens and like a gloves and like all the ones that he brought over from the first movie, they're just so forced, so pushed, so unnatural. It just, yeah, it was, ugh.
But also, like, with the like a glove, I don't remember, in the first, like, I kept like, why do they keep doing this thing where he like rolls the car and it like jumps it into the parking spot?
Take it one step further than skidding it into a stop, because that's what he did in the first one. Is he slid it right in front of the police station and parallel parked it perfectly? Right?
Yeah, but with that the like a glove makes sense. Like a glove,
yes. So this is, oh, he's so wacky because he flipped it into the spot. He fucked that guy's car up, but, you know, at least it's like a glove. It's still like a glove. It's hilarious, don't you know? Yeah, no, it's...
Yeah, they lost the through line on this one.
Yeah, they really did. It's, hey, remember when you said that thing? It was hilarious. Do it again. Yeah. That's what so many moments of this movie were. Yeah. And even like this whole, I mean, let's offend two different cultures if we can. Let's get him into like a Tibet monk monastery, and let's also, you know, take him into Africa. But like, you know, the fact that his like mantra thing is all righty then, like,
yeah,
like
I didn't want to sound like pompous, but every time I was watching this movie, jokes like that, or the interrogation where he's scratching the plate. Mm-hmm. In my mind, I was just like, oh, it's so juvenile. That's what I would think every single time. Juvenile. I was like, it's so juvenile. Like,
you have.
And I would just, and I was like, oh, you call him, like, get over yourself. But every single time, that's all I could think is like, this is just like child, like, my daughter, I didn't even think my daughter would think it was that funny. Like, no, and then sometimes with movies, like, I get it's 1995. Like, I have to think, like, clearly people found it funny back then, mm-hmm. but like, I don't know.
Well, 200 and whatever, 30 million worth of people found it funny. 2 weekends worth of people found it funny. Yeah.
Yeah, that's
actually
like,
that could even just be an opening weekend. That would be hilarious to find that out. Has like a 97% decline in the second weekend.
Well, I should have looked up
actual weekend numbers.
Yeah. But I mean, I was also thinking, like, that's a crazy box office to not have a third, like, another sequel. Like, but I mean,
I think
I
he
don't
was
know.
just done with the
I
character.
think he was done. Yeah.
I mean, I read that even he was kind of concerned about the possibility of it being offensive. Like, it's not like he went into this and went, "Oh yeah, everything here is just absolutely kosher. I don't think
Yeah.
we're going to offend anybody." He didn't come in with that. He did come in with a lot of, "Are you sure, guys? Are you sure we're okay with this?" So,
I mean, I'm shocked that he didn't end up in blackface in this movie, to be honest. Like, I feel like he was close,
he was
but
close.
he didn't quite get there.
Yeah, that tribal mask, when that came out, I'm like, okay, because I could have possibly Mandela affected my way into remembering this in a much more offensive manner.
Yeah.
And I guess another example of your like just super, oh, this is juvenile, is like when the guys are showing him the slideshow and he's just doing shadow puppets on them.
Yeah, that was one too. I was just like, so juvenile.
So juvenile. Now the baby bird thing, the now, okay, I have to at least give it due of when it got a real laugh out of me. And there was one moment that got a real laugh at me because out of me because I forgot that it happened. And that's when they're leaving the temple and he says, "I just have to do one thing first." And I'm like, "Oh, what offensive shit is this gonna be?" But when it was the slinky, I'm like,
Oh
okay, that's funny.
yeah.
That's funny. And even the fact that it, like, it stops one. Ah, oh, can I go do it again? Like, yeah, it. So I will give props to the slinky. That was a funny joke.
Fine, fine. We'll grant that one.
I am looking for the shining light at the end of this turd. I mean, I gotta at least give props to the new jokes that they put in, because it wouldn't have been as funny if there had been a slinky joke in the first movie, and all this one was a longer staircase.
Yeah.
I did actually kind of laugh or chuckle, snort at the part where he's driving down the smooth road, but he's bumping around like he's off-roading with the Jeep. That was also kind of funny. Until then, it became too much. Like, it went a little too far.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, at the party, he's. See, and again, to compare it to the first one, at the party, in the first one, he's pretending to be like the FDA inspector or the whatever it is, the food safety inspector. Whereas this one, it's I'm just gonna put shit in my teeth, like decorate my entire face with asparagus and cucumbers and whatever the fuck and be funny about it. And then I'm gonna
Yeah.
knock out some guy and throw him over my shoulder. I get it, you're doing a whole activist thing, but
But I mean,
the Tom Ace shit was funnier at the other one.
that's a good point that like he's not really he doesn't do the pet detective
No.
in this movie. Like in the other movie, it's like his whole thing is like, he dresses up as the UPS man to like he does the food inspector thing. Like in this movie, he never like does any like undercover like spy work really, except the rhino, I guess. But like,
He dressed up at the party as Tom Ace in the first one because he wanted to go inspect the tank. But what's he doing at this one? He's there for a meeting. He's there to get
Yeah.
hired. Like, he doesn't even know what his job is once he's at that party. Like, it's just, yeah, let's put him in another funny part. It was they looked at the first movie, said people thought this party scene was hilarious because he was doing funny shit to food.
Yeah.
So let's make him hang shit out of his mouth. And it's like, well, no, that's not what was funny about him at the party. And, like, as soon as they mention mating season, we have to have the lion sleeps tonight kick in just to remind us of that joke from the first movie as well.
Yeah. Yeah, it also sucks too. I mean, I'm sure this was purely a cost thing, but it was like I hate in sequels when it's like as if the first movie never happened. Like, where is Courtney Cox?
Anybody,
Where is anybody that you like grew fond of in the other movie? to add. It's hard when you do a sequel, but you're basically like, you're not even starting a square one. You've almost gone backwards.
Like, wouldn't it be neat if he was still searching for that albino pigeon?
Have some kind of continuation.
That's what took him to the mountains in the first place, is he's trying to find this albino pigeon, and that's when he comes across this stranded raccoon. Because even in the beginning, he is not a pet detective, he's a pet hero. No
Yeah,
one had.
he's a pet rescuer.
Yeah, no one had hired him to find this raccoon.
Yeah, no.
This one got separated from the mother. Like, yeah, he's now pet activist, not pet detective. Yeah, now I've realized this movie made me angry.
Oh, it's man.
And then I guess, I mean, a lot of the jokes, of course, come from the fact that they are in Africa and they don't understand the customs. So we get all the hilarious things like him getting spat in the face by the chief as a sign of respect. So of course he has to outdo everyone. But I think even the fact that when they're driving down the highway and he says that, oh my God, like they're in the middle of nowhere and all this sort of stuff, and you see the billboard on the side of the road, that's supposed to be a joke about, ah ha ha ha, he thinks that they're uncivilized here. But you know what that billboard was advertising? I think it was advertising Sponsorship Corner. Took a
There we
long way to
go.
get into that one, yeah, but I realized I hadn't been there yet. So, always on the lookout for product placements in movies. This week, Ace Ventura, When Nature Calls, is brought to you by Subway Restaurant. It was a Subway Restaurant billboard, Jeep, Sharp Electronics, Ray-Ban sunglasses, and Slinky. I'm surprised that's it. You've got like another Ace Ventura movie, and that's the only sponsors you managed to slip in? Like, even with the fact that you're going to Africa?
I forgot. Yeah, there's the subway sign on the road there.
Yeah. And I guess, I mean, plus guano, sponsored by guano, because they definitely lean into that joke a lot. And this has been Sponsorship Corner. So now, let's look at this mystery movie that we've got here as a whole. Were you on to the bad guy right from the beginning, or did it take you a minute? Because I mean, they did try to make it into a bit of a mystery. Who's really the culprit?
I'm gonna say I felt like I was onto it pretty, like I thought whatever that guy's name with the British guy, the consul guy, I thought he was for sure gonna be
Can't be.
involved. Kind of because, but more so because I realized like the movie was just like following the same kind of like plot as the first one, where it's just gonna be like the person you least expect is so totally obvious is gonna be the one. But then also because they didn't do a whole lot with the people that they set up in that little slideshow presentation to be the bad guy. Like you don't even really see them.
The poacher guys, yeah.
Yeah, you don't really even see them until way later, and it's really in like a kind of innocuous conversation where like nothing is really happening when he's in the rhino suit,
Yeah.
and then those other two guys, the ones who actually have the bat, like
You go, oh yeah, those guys.
yeah, that's how it actually felt, where you're just like, oh, we forgot we had these guys, we got to shoehorn them in at the end somehow, we forgot, like we need to use
Yeah, he
them.
was picking their noses on the with shadow puppets. We have to make sure that we include them again. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I wasn't sure whether you saw the twist coming a mile away. But like,
But I think
what
too,
so
I mentioned like before, it was the first time I watched it, I also didn't compre I couldn't comprehend what was happening with the African tribes.
well,
And like
see,
and
yeah.
who was getting married. I thought the British guy was getting married to somebody and he needed Ace to sort something out so that his wedding could go. That's what I thought the movie was the first time I watched it until it kind of got
Yeah.
towards the end. And then it was when I watched it the second time, I paid closer attention and I understood what was happening there, but
Well, I know when I watched through it, I didn't even realize that the like little energetic guy was the I didn't realize that was who she was marrying. I just thought that was the fiercest warrior in the tribe. I
yeah.
didn't realize it was also the prince. Yeah, so that's not all that clear. And to your point about introducing characters and then, like forgetting about them for a while, like even the guys that he has the meeting, the guys that end up ultimately being the bad guys, he goes off on this little quest for so long with these African tribes and spends time with both of them that you forget about those other guys for a while too. He's rolling along in this adventure, and the story doesn't really feel like it's progressing. Like, it doesn't feel like he's actually investigating anything. He is now also an ambassador. He's also like, he's a negotiator all of a sudden. They were confused as to what Ace Ventura actually does for a living, it feels like. And that's the charm.
Yeah, it kind of seemed, I don't even know if I'd use the word confused. I just kind of, it kind of just felt like this movie just feels like it was rushed. You know what I mean? It just feels like they didn't take the time. It was like they clearly thought they had lightning in a bottle and they needed to strike. I'm using too many like phrases. I was gonna say they needed to strike while the iron is hot. I don't know, throw something else in there. But like it's like they could have just taken some time. They did have a great thing,
With
and
the
then they
first
just
one.
shat all over it.
Because, I mean, I'm just even as I'm looking through my notes, like another example of how they made this guy an asshole is he goes to the tribe, and what's one of the things he does is there's the warrior up on top of the pole doing his like
His, yeah.
warrior, training or whatever, like his ultimate test that he has to do, and he starts shaking the pole and like spitting spitballs at him and it's just like, what did this guy do to you? At least when you picked on guys in the first one, they were assholes to you too.
Yeah, that and that's the other thing is that, I don't know if you're saying before, but like when they're in the temple with that one chief and the chief doesn't want him to stand on the thing, and then it's like he does that thing where every time the chief's not looking, he goes and jumps over it and like dances on the little altar thing. And it's like I was just watching, I was like, that's not funny. You know what I mean? It's like the idea that people in 1995 would have thought that is funny kind of makes you realize how racist people in 1995 were, because it's just like it's so disrespectful.
It
Like
very,
if like you could not put that in a movie now without that person getting the shit beat out of them.
And then he comes back later to dust for fingerprints and fucks the entire shrine up again by coating it in powder.
Yeah.
And and then like tips over the cage and like he's ruined everything in that room. So like he takes it a step further even. So he's just like completely disrespectful of all these cultures or like every cultural thing that's going on around him. So let's talk about the scene that traumatized you, the rhino giving birth scene, which oh boy. Like first of all, where did he get the rhino? Right? Like he's, he talks about how he's this master of disguise and they show this little montage of, him sitting with chimpanzees or wiggling his ears like a hippo. But then, like now he's got a mechanical rhino. Like, what the fuck? Like,
Why couldn't you just hit out in a bush or like
yeah.
a nice little sand, like how desert style, how the army does it, where they have those little parks.
I mean, I bring it up as like, why do they have this? And I mean, obviously it's just because they made this movie as stupid as possible. So I just. I'm looking at for logic, but
I don't think you're gonna find any. I think
exactly, but
this one exists purely for the overall like the birthing scene and the safari and all that. Like,
I think the biggest reason why I bring it up is it's just like, why did they make these choices? Like, it really makes you wonder why.
I mean, if I'm being completely honest, I actually think that in the script of this movie, the movie starts here. I think when this movie is conceived, this is the scene.
This is the moment they're working towards.
This is the scene that starts the movie. And then everything else is built, deconstructed yeah, off it, and then built forward from it. Like, I think this was the very first thing that was thought of when people thought about Ace Ventura When Nature Calls.
Wow, this is the keystone right here. Wow, yeah. Someone's like, you know, I've been working on this rhino suit. Yeah, and like, you know, someone was like, I bet Jim Carrey could fit through that hole.
it's such a on its own, it's such a just like a funny sketch scene. And I think, and so like, to me, I don't know, I would be willing to bet like good money that when, what's his name, Steve Odekirk, when he was conceiving ideas and like how to and where to start writing for Ace Ventura 2, that it started with this idea, and then it was just like, okay, well, this is, I want to see this in a movie, how do I get here?
Yeah,
and then where do we go?
Yeah, how can I get someone falling out of a rhinoceros in the African safari? Go.
Yeah.
it's frustrating to see a scene like that in this movie, because it's just there was nothing even remotely that stupid in the first one.
No.
Like, it feels like the shark.
Yeah, the shark
is the dumbest that they got in the first one.
Yeah.
You know, the do not go in there, but
the shark, it's the complete opposite, because the shark, at least it makes sense. Mm-hmm. Like when he goes, yeah. and then the payoff of like the do not go, like, is hysterical, because it's just like, you know, he's just been through the ringer.
Yeah.
But in this one, it's like, I don't know, it's just like not, like, it's weirdly not, again, I go back to these like rules of comedy. It's weirdly not surprising that what unfolds, because it's like, as soon as you realize he's trapped, and he, like, they handhold you through it, whereas like in the first one, it's like, you know, you see he's it's unexpected that there's going to be a shark there.
Yeah, I got a nice treat for you, little guy. Yeah, and that was the funny stuff from the first one, but now all of a sudden in this one, you make him afraid of the animal that he's trying to protect. Like in the original, he you know, Snowflake was a good boy. You know, he enjoyed the performance. In this one, it's, I don't even want to go in that fucking cave because I hate bats. So I don't even want to rescue the thing that I have been hired to rescue. Instead, I'm just going to go into these tribes and desecrate all of their beliefs. That's what I'm going to do instead. Like, it just, he's a very hurtful character. He's a very spiteful character in this movie. It's,
yeah.
Okay, I've got another funny moment. The blow darts. Him getting hit with the blow darts and trying to run with, and then the too many blow darts. I thought that was a funny moment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think about what moments I thought were funny. I thought the fight, for whatever, I thought the fight was funny enough. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, see,
I'm trying to think.
Like, yeah, because, I mean, but the fight, like, he gets the spears in the legs at the, you know, and yeah. So it's, like, it's kind of funny, but he's like, it's in the bone. It's like, I know it's an Ace Ventura movie, but if you're going to do something like that, at least have his legs wrapped in bandages for the rest of the movie or something, right? Like,
yeah.
At least remind the audience that he was injured at some point.
I will say that a moment that could have been hysterical to me would have been if he would have like a gloved riding the elephant somehow. Like I think that could have made me laugh.
Yeah.
But
having him sit on the car was kind of funny.
That was funny, yes.
We got him. Okay, so between Ace Ventura and Happy Gilmore, who wrestles a crocodile better? Who wrestles a fake crocodile better?
I'm going to give it to Happy Gilmore, I think.
Yeah, because he gets his ball back.
I did, for whatever reason, think it was hilarious that he, like, after he gets knocked out and he's strapped to the, for some reason I thought it was really funny that the monkey just abandons him and then he does end up going over the waterfall, like, yeah. That was really unexpected.
the monkey going, I'm getting the fuck out of here, though. Like, that was also one of those funny scenes. But hey, it was with one of the other characters. It wasn't Ace Ventura that was being funny in that moment.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that's a character that came over from the first movie. So it's Ace and this monkey.
Spike,
I think, yeah. And then so we get also he meditates and astral projects himself back to the temple, so we've got that fun treat to add into this. Like, I just you took everything that was great about the first one and just fucked with it. Like, I look at movies that came out around the same time that I loved just as much in this era, like American Pie.
Mm-hmm.
And American Pie took the circumstances from the first movie and increased them for the second movie, made them grosser, made them more over the top. But the story that brought you to these events was a good story in all three of the movies.
Mm-hmm.
So even though you keep pushing the boundaries, you're still grounded in the same sort of stories because they're just, this is our summer, this is our graduation. But with this one, you've got him in a monster truck at one point. You have him in a robotic rhinoceros. You have him going over a waterfall and surviving. Like, it's just, now we're bringing in astral projection. Like, it's, who is this character? This is not the guy in the UPS uniform. This is not the guy that pretended that he was Tom Ace. This is, you know, like, it's just, master of just disguise, I don't want to see him pretending to be a hippo. I want to see him actually being like a dolphin trainer with a funny German accent.
Yeah, I think too is like when it comes to story, like the story differences, is it's not really a mystery of who took the bat. It's just trying to find out where it is. And I think that is like, it's just the whole, like, detective, the detective part of Ace Ventura is missing, I guess, is kind of where I'm at with this one. Like,
it's a good thing it's not called Ace Ventura Pet Detective 2,
yeah.
When Nature Calls. Like, yeah, it is a good thing that they dropped that moniker from the title then. Yeah.
Yeah, like,
because there is no detection.
I almost would have rather have seen it be, like, another police force, like, was, like, oh, we heard about your work on the Miami case. And then it's like Ace goes to, I don't know, San Diego, where there's a massive fucking zoo. I'm sure they could have done something there.
Yeah, him walking away and, you know, going to find himself spiritually and all that. Like, it just, it wasn't the right choice. It was the choice was wrong right from that moment.
Yeah, especially because the thing, it never matters again.
Yeah.
Him finding himself or whatever never matters again. He doesn't even have to like tap into it to get over his fear of bats or anything like that. Mm-hmm. And the only callback is when he astral projects to his mentor there to do the little figure it out by,
yeah,
like guiding him through to the shit, to the back to the guano or whatever. Yeah. But
which is, I mean, that's the exact, it's a ripoff of the scene where he figures out that Lois Einhorn is Ray Finkel in the first one, except this time, yeah, he has to be like, oh, I threw it away and it's in a big pile of bat shit. Oh, bat shit. Right. Mm-hmm. So it just, he comes to the conclusion in a different way, but it is done in such a goofy manner that takes you from the grounded character from the first one. As over the top as Ace Ventura is, he was still grounded in the first one.
Yeah, and it's like they add nothing new. It's also like he doesn't grow in this movie. He kind of devolves, like you were saying. Oh, yeah. He's just meaner. But it's like even the thing, like one of my favorite parts of Pet Detective is when it's his whole end thing when he lays it all out, how he figured out it was Einhorn, the way he did. But he does it like three times in this movie. He does it like right off the bat. And I guess that one was wrong because we find out at the end when he does it again, like what the real story was. But it's just kind of like they're just going back to the well.
And it's
they're
not funnier like when he's right. Like that's the thing. Yeah. It's like if the first one was wrong, it's funnier when it turns out that he was right, but he was just missing a piece. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, that's, like, it's the same thing with the Einhorn reveal, where, like, he thinks that he's got it, and he pulls off her skirt, and we don't see Mr. Happy, but, mm-hmm. like, it's just, but he does have that moment of redemption at the end of it, whereas, yeah, this one, it's like, it would be nice if his first theory was wrong, and then it turns out that he was right after all. But, yeah, I mean, and it's even the one where he does accuse the one guy and then rewind himself, because that was a joke that was funny in the first movie, right? That, I will admit, that was a funny moment when he rewinds himself and redoes it, but you're right. That's one of the accusations of a few that he has, and it takes away the joy of it.
Yeah.
I like when he outdoes the cops in the first one. I like when he solves their crime. You know, like.
Yeah. I felt like the like animal activist thing too was a bit too much in this movie. Mm-hmm. Like even the whole scene, like I'm sure played well when it came out, but even when he like knocks out the Monopoly guy and starts wearing him as a scarf, I was just like, that was like too much.
It is, like, okay, I will throw, I mean, just like Trading Places, we get another, you know, human being fucked by a gorilla joke as well to kind of help close out this movie. You know, that just, that right there is almost a metaphor for this entire movie. Is we get to see another human game fucked by a gorilla. But at the end, we have the wedding that happens, and we find out that Ace Ventura deflowered the bride. That was another moment that was actually kind of funny to me, where it's like, okay, yeah, right. Of course Ace got in there. Why not? But there we go. I'll throw it out on a positive note. How about that? Instead of him running through the town holding a terrible-looking bat, running through the village, and Chicago. Ugh. The Chicago joke was a little bit amusing to me. Unlike the bit where he was tap dancing on the shrine, the bit where he kept saying Chicago to make the guys kowtow, that was funny. And then it's like shiitake mushroom. Yeah, that was.
Yeah.
That one kind of made me smile, too. So there we go. Ending on a positive, even though that's not at the end. I don't know. Anything else to say about When Nature Calls, or let's get out of here?
I think let's just pull the cord on this one.
There we go. And that is Ace Ventura, When Nature Calls. Now, Colin. On IMDb, get ready to have your mind fucking blown. On IMDb, it scored 6.4 out of 10, has a Metascore of 43. On Rotten Tomatoes, this one makes sense, 21% on the tomato meter, but an audience rating of 72%.
What?
Oh boy, audiences of Rotten Tomatoes, what the fuck is wrong with you? But Colin, those are just numbers. Like a glove. Hit us with some reviews. See, it's just as funny when I say it as most of the times that they used it in the movie, right? Like, it makes just as much sense.
Mm-hmm.
Like a glove, hit us with some reviews. I don't know. I guess it's funny, right? Right, Ace Ventura?
Jackson Burton says, 5 out of 5 stars, played this during my wife's labor. Made her laugh so hard she almost forgot she was having a baby. Named our little boy Jim after this movie. Was scared that Ace might get him bullied in school. Anywho, this flick has lots of laugh out loud moments and fun for the whole family. Probably my second favorite flick of all time behind that kooky little Venom sequel that came out last year. Would definitely recommend. All right, this guy is like tasting
yeah,
movies.
Oh,
is not like, to be taken seriously.
Oh boy, you know, I love the whole Venom verse. I mean, we got Morbius too. That one and
yeah, I bet he loved
Madam Web. Yeah. Fuck, they're killing it over at Sony, you know?
Yeah. 2 out of 5 stars. Ace Ventura had good and silly comedy in it, which made it fun to watch, and I was expecting the same from the sequel, but it was the opposite of what I expected. The sequel was just bland, boring, and felt unnecessary. It was missing all the elements that made the original fun to watch. This one was just a forceful comedy that failed to make you laugh. The story was bad, the screenplay was bad, the direction was average, and the performances were also not as strong as the original. Overall, I would say that you should ignore this sequel and just enjoy the original, as this one will surely disappoint you.
Yeah. Have you ever seen the, like, Ace Ventura Jr.?
No, but I... Was there an Ace Ventura cartoon?
There was a cartoon, too.
Okay, yeah. I was going to say, I feel like I watched a cartoon.
Okay, yeah. I'm wondering whether, like, it's better without Jim Carrey. I know it's just a kid, but if he's back to Pet Detection in that movie, though.
Yeah. Yeah, we should do, like, a weird sequels month where we watch Ace Ventura Jr. and Son of the Mask.
Yeah, unwanted franchises.
Yeah.
Coming this January. There you go.
Gian Vita Douglas is 1 out of 5 stars. I was mortified when I put this movie on for my son and his best friend whose family is from Sierra Leone. I had never watched it before and had no idea how horribly racist it is. It wasn't until I checked in with them and saw a couple of scenes that I realized. I think Jim Carrey's humor is perfect for preteens, and I get the odd belly laugh, but this movie is grossly derogatory of African culture, and I'm so ashamed of having let the boys watch it. There you go. Most of the reviews, I will say, as I was looking, were generally positive and line up with the Rotten Tomatoes score, surprisingly.
That's wild. It really is, yeah. Oh, boy. Yeah, Ace Ventura, When Nature Calls. I knew going into this movie that I was probably not going to be turned around on it, but there was still just, you know, like every once in a while, you want to share your trauma with someone else. You know, you just, you've skated by too far in life without seeing this movie. And I feel like it was just time. No, I did want to see where this held up, because when I was younger, I genuinely did like it more than I do now. But now I just like you, how juvenile. It very much has become that. Like, yeah, when I was a 17-year-old kid, I was enjoying this movie. I was let down from the original. It definitely was not one that I loved when I was younger, but I did find it funnier when I was a kid than I do now. But now it's just, what a waste of a movie. They took a great character and ruined it so quickly. It took them 90 minutes to just absolutely destroy a character. Actually, quite frankly, it took them about 15 minutes to actually ruin a character. Just maintained how ruined that character was. Yeah. So, Colin, your first viewing of Ace Ventura, When Nature Calls. I'm sorry, buddy. I really should apologize, but
I'm going to go back because I thought about the scene that made me laugh.
Okay.
So I actually think that the feeding the baby pigeon, so the first minute of this movie, I did laugh because I thought like that was hilarious. And
Okay.
part of it is because, I don't know, back in like 2017, I went to this fringe show that where the person, these people were like, they're having some sort of weird argument and they kept being like, baby bird me, and that's all my like.
Okay.
So anytime I see a baby bird get fed by someone chewing up food and spitting in its mouth, I find it hilarious. But
Okay.
other than that, I'm gonna say that this film is a Lahoo Zaher.
Zaher? Nice, nice.
Yeah, I think not only is this film bad, but it also almost makes the first film bad. Like it's almost so bad that it just ruins the entire franchise and character.
Okay.
And so I like say
I've seen your future, Ace. I see where you're headed. I do not condone that. Yeah.
So yeah, I would definitely like anybody who hasn't watched it, I would say just like and you if you like the first one, just stay in your like your bliss and just pretend this movie doesn't exist. It's just not Ace Ventura. It's almost like how whenever we talk about like Die Hard or like these like action buddy cop movies and you realize pretty quickly that a lot of times it's like somebody just wrote a buddy cop script and couldn't shop it around and then years later they wanted to make a new John McClane movie or a new Rush Hour or whatnot and they're like, oh well, let's just take these names and put them on these guys and like shoot this movie with and we'll add the little flair that we need. And that's kind of what this movie feels like in a way, where it's just like it could have just been anything, but they just
You could have
threw Ace Ventura on there, put him on cocaine, and let him fly.
Yeah, no, you could have put Ernest in this role. You could have put Pee-wee Herman in this role. You could have put, the guys from Dude, Where's My Car in this role. Like, yeah, you could have, it could have just been anyone that was searching for an animal. Yeah.
Yeah, I think my kind of estimation of this film is that it's what happens when somebody realizes they have a hot property but not enough time to like put any thought into it.
Yeah,
And
yeah.
they just want to get it out and make money, which congrats they did. But
Thank
like
you.
the story is just atrocious. Like this is not a good movie.
Yeah, and like any good gambler, like it's like Jim Carrey just knew when to walk away. He's like, you know what? I got lucky with that one. We made the money back. I'm not going for a third dip in that well.
No. But so yeah.
Is Ace Ventura a character that you would like to see current day Jim Carrey revisit and try to redeem? No,
You
right?
know, no, but I'm not but like the thing is like I actually don't like Jim Carrey. I should say I like him as a like guy, but like I'm not really a big fan of him as an actor anymore. And I'm also not like a big fan of his comedy. When I was watching this movie, there were certain points where I was like, oh, I think Ryan Reynolds kind of ripped off a little bit of Jim Carrey, but did it the right way and kept
He
it
knew when to pump the brakes.
and kept it understated.
Yeah.
And I would actually like I would love to see a reboot of Ace Ventura for the modern day with Ryan Reynolds.
Ryan Reynolds, okay.
I also think that Ace Ventura would be something in the days of, the golden age of television and everything that we have happening. Like it's a better
TV
like TV
series.
series, I think, like
Yeah.
than a movie
Yeah.
property.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It really is wild that it seems to be the solution so many times. We joke, like we say it mockingly, the golden age of television, because that's what everybody talks about. But it really is true. So many of these failed franchises that we've seen would be so much better as a series, or like
Yeah, because it takes time. That's like the thing that TV allows, that like these movies, so often when a movie is bad, it's because like the story just doesn't have time to unfold at like the right pace, and you don't have they don't have enough time to really explain or like give every character their due, and so things always seem ham-fisted or like glossed over too much. Whereas in TV you have like more opportunity to like give people their due and let things simmer and cook and that kind of stuff, it seems like.
Yeah, I would really like to see this pet detective solve some detective cases because that's what I like in the first movie. Yeah. It sucks that he's just Ace Ventura.
Yeah, I
He's
guess
no longer.
that's like the at the end of the day, it turns out that we didn't want Ace Ventura, we wanted the
There we go. That's Ace Ventura When Nature Calls, and that's our show for this week. Oh boy, if you like that show, well, tell someone. Word of mouth is so important. Just telling people will just get more earballs on the show, and that's what we want. It means more coming from you personally. Or go over to whatever app you listen to your podcasts on. Give us a review, give us some stars, help drive us up the charts, because the more clicks, the more downloads, all that sort of stuff, it just helps you get noticed in the algorithms of all those different audio places. Or if you want to be a financial supporter, go over to patreon.com/IUsedToLikeThisOne and you become an executive producer so you get a shout out on the show, like executive producer Joshua Blum of the 13th Hour Podcast.
And be sure to check out our website, IUsedToLikeThisOne.com, where you'll find links to all of our podcast episodes and social media pages. I'm going to suggest that you hit us up on Instagram, as that's probably the, or Facebook, actually. Those are the best two places to engage with us. And drop us a line at IUsedToLikeThisOne@gmail.com. Let us know what movies you used to like, and then maybe you'll find us talking about them on the show.
Here's a social media peek behind the curtain for you. I always start on Instagram. Okay. So all my posts go up on Instagram first because I can do the most with Instagram. If I want to make one of my memes musical, I can only do it on Instagram or Facebook. So that's where they're best. But Instagram gives me the most time for musical memes. I get 30 seconds. So I always start on there and then they get lower and lower as I go because I can't say as much on Twitter or Blue Sky. Like, yeah, it's... So yeah, Instagram is my number one choice, and then Facebook is my number two choice. Yeah, so you're right there. Yeah.
Nice.
Anyway, music by Lyndon Carter. Look for his band, Carter and the Capitals, anywhere you listen to music, or apparently like all over the place. They're touring a lot right now. They're like, they got a lot of dates. He's always advertising stuff. Oh boy, Colin. So yes, we are in our sequels month, revisiting movies that we have already watched but we want to see the sequels to, or in this case didn't want to see the sequel to, but we saw the sequel to anyway.
Well, and for I didn't really know that I didn't want to see it fully until I watched it, so you know.
Yeah, well, speaking of sequels, I was telling you this before we started recording, but speaking of sequels, with the brand new Beverly Hills Cop Axel Foley having been released on Netflix, I feel like we need to go back and visit the world of Beverly Hills Cop. And so I want to watch Beverly Hills Cop 2.
Alrighty.
I think you're going to like this one.
Alrighty then.
Alrighty then. Yeah, get that out of your system because you don't want to think about that anymore. Yeah. No, yeah, I mean, the first one I remember you liked, but you just didn't get why it was like so beloved, I don't think. But the second one, it is a funnier movie than the first one.
Okay.
That's for sure. They lean more into the fact that they have Eddie Murphy for it. So you might finally get a real taste of Eddie Murphy. You've always been let down by Eddie Murphy on this show. I think Beverly Hills Cop, I think this is where we turn the corner on Eddie Murphy in your view.
All right, man. Well, I'll trust you. I'm going in with an open mind and an open heart.
I will promise as this much, it's better than Ace Ventura When Nature Calls.
All right.
It's far better than Ace Ventura: When Nature Calls.
Well, there we go.
And now you can just purge it. Purge it from your mind forever.
Yeah. Yes. I need one of those, like, neuralizers from Men in Black.
That's what you need, yeah. Well, there we go. Until next week, I'm Sean Wells.
I'm Colin Stewart.
Thank you for listening, and we will see you for Beverly Hills Cop Part 2. Oh, no, I used to like this one.